Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of You're Wrong with David Harsanyi and Molly Hemingway. Molly, this is the last recording we're doing before the midterm elections. Pretty exciting.
I know. I am excited. And I'm at the point where I just want to get to election day or that period of time after election day where we count ballots, because we are in decline as a country and we can no longer determine elections on election day. It takes us a few weeks or months.
I've read there have been numerous stories about how it's going to be election week or election month. Pennsylvania and other states have already warned that it's going to take a long time. And that's going to, well, not just as that frustrating, but it does also lead to a lot of conspiracy theories that sometimes there might be something there, but sometimes aren't true because we simply don't trust these people. And the longer it takes, the more that ferments, right?
Yeah, I think it's just like any other contest. You might have a lot of lead up to a football game, but you kind of want to know the score at the end of the game, not have people go to private places, add the totals of the scores and make decisions about which points counted and which points didn't count, and then come back like a month later to tell you who won and who lost. Like it's not a brilliant strategy. And there's a reason why up until like 2020, election observers used to say that delay in announcing who had won was a sign of a problematic election.
I have a bad feeling about what's going to happen next week. You know, I don't mean the election itself. I mean, post-election stuff. I just think it's going to get ugly. But I just wanted to preface this. I'm going to make some predictions.
But
I am not serious about them. I am not one of these people who takes deep dives into polls, because I think the polls, frankly, are BS. We see the same thing every time. They show Democrats winning and then they tighten up, like millions of people are changing their mind every week. You know, it's just not reality in my view. So these are just these are intuitive picks, not anything that people should take seriously. And I do not at all stand by them or anything like that.
Wait,
how about you?
Really? Yeah. Oh, I'm happy to make some predictions, but I haven't really thought about it. So that'll be my warning.
Right. I'd like to. So I just wanted to quickly start with New York, where Hochul and Zeldin are running, and there's a lot of excitement. I know a lot of people in New York. I grew up there. I have family there, more excited about voting this time than they have been in 20 years or something. They're just really excited. But I am very skeptical that Zeldin can pull it off. How do you feel about that race?
So I'm also skeptical, but I will say that I feel about the New York governor's race very much how I felt about the Virginia governor's race. And I was extremely skeptical that Glenn Youngkin would pull that off, and he did. So my skepticism does not mean I think it's impossible or that it is impossible. It's just that New York is such a lost state that so many Republican voters have fled because of the governance there, that I just think it would be really difficult for Lee Zeldin to win. Having said that, Kathy Hochul is a remarkably bad candidate. She's no Andrew Cuomo or Cuomo family member. She doesn't seem particularly likable. Her governance issues are a problem in that she was totally tied to all of the bad decisions that her predecessor made. She had some major gaffes in her debate. That line about why do you care about crime so much was tone deaf. But she's leaning into the abortion stuff, and she's hope. And I think maybe people like killing babies enough in New York to make that work.
Well, the abortion stuff is weird to me because obviously I think most New Yorkers know that nothing's going to change on that front. And yet the real problem that they're worried about is the rising crime rates. And she essentially blows that off and just is obsessed with the abortion issue. And I think Zeldin actually said he doesn't want to change abortion policy in New York anyway, which
that's bad, because New York abortion laws are very radical.
So anyway, so that's one. Then there's New Hampshire, where Maggie, do you think, I want to say in that race, because of how the polling has done this thing where it's always tightening up at the end, I feel like for some reason, just again, I'm not a poll diver. I'm not a horse race guy. I just think the Republican has a chance there.
definitely has a chance. He even has polls that have a few polls that have him ahead. I'm not particularly optimistic for him, for Bolduc in this case either. But again, he's running against a very bad candidate, Maggie Hassan. She doesn't really generate excitement. She's tied to a party that is politically toxic right now, the Democrat Party, which has brought the country to an economic situation that a lot of people don't like. And Bolduc is a pretty savvy campaigner. He's doing it with no establishment Republican support, which is really amazing. So I wouldn't be shocked. Like, all of these races are so close that we really could be in a place of major surprise, meaning Democrats could pull off every single one of these close races, or Republicans could. And that means that one, you know, party or the other could get a pretty sizable, workable majority.
Well, all the underlying factors lead me to believe that Republicans are going to do very well, though. Just from my long history of watching elections, even though I have been wrong, as you well know, just because I think I ignored the underlying signs in 2016 that this is going to be a very good year for Republicans. But we'll see. But Georgia, I think at this point, I'm on the Walker bandwagon. I think he's going to win that race. And I think he's going to win that race.
When? On Tuesday or in the runoff?
I think he'll win it on Tuesday.
Man, that's a bold prediction. I want to fight with you more because I was just telling colleague Sean Davis that I've been talking to a bunch of people on the ground in Georgia, and they seem to be pretty bullish on Walker being able to pull it off without a runoff.
Don't you sense a lot of panic from Warnock and a lot of panic in that state? That's my sense of the rhetoric that's going on. It's not the rhetoric of people who are comfortably ahead or even think they will win.
Yeah, one thing to keep in mind is that election was the Georgia election was completely overtaken by Zuckerbucks, that private funding and takeover of government election offices. And even with that takeover and the massive tens of millions of dollars of spending, they still only won that race for Biden by like 11,000 votes, which was very close. They since made Zuckerbucks illegal. Now, the left-wing groups that operate to take over election systems have figured out other ways to embed in our election system other than these private grants. But that's going to be a huge hurt to Georgia Democrats who got this unfair advantage in the 2020 election that helped them secure two Senate seats and the presidency for Biden. So I don't know. Certainly the momentum is with Walker. You heard Chuck Schumer admit that to Joe Biden on the hot mic incident last week, that polls were collapsing for Warnock. So I think you're safe there too.
I'm not a big conspiracy theorist, as you know, but I do not believe that hot mics exist. I think every hot mic moment is planned. And I just don't understand what that hot mic moment was supposed to do. Lower expectations in Georgia. I don't know. Wisconsin.
Really like that conspiracy theory that 100% of hot mics aren't real. I like
in
that.
In politics. Yeah.
I like.
Ron Johnson is going to win, right?
Absolutely. Every poll has him, I think, above 50, except for the Fox News poll and one other, like PPP, that far left wing poll. And that's good. I mean, that was supposed to be a really tight race, and he seems to be not just doing well, but well enough to maybe even pull the Republican candidate for governor over.
Yeah, I mean, he's over 50%. So it seems like a pretty safe bet. I just do want to mention, as I've noted numerous times on this podcast, I do not think Herschel Walker is a quality candidate. But it is interesting that is the obsession of the media all the time, to talk about the lack of quality and yet not talk about Mandela Barnes, who is a terrible, just extremist candidate who praised the Iranian president one time, you know, and stuff like that.
Yeah, and their attorney general in Wisconsin endorsed the Antifa handbook or whatever. Like, they've got really bad candidates. My brother sent me this clip from Frozen Caveman Lawyer.
Yeah.
Do you remember this from Saturday Night Live?
Oh, no. I was thinking about the Geico Caveman ads. I don't remember that.
How do you not know Frozen Caveman Lawyer?
I don't watch Saturday Night Live.
Or sorry,
when was this from?
Unfrozen Caveman Lawyer. So it was, I mean, when was it? I think it was the 90s.
Oh,
well, and you
maybe.
remember Jack Handy,
yeah,
the writer? He wrote the character Phil Hartman, one of my very favorite comedians ever, played him. And it was about a guy who had been a caveman, and then he like got frozen, and then he was unthawed, and then he would do different things. And my brother sent me this link to when he ran for the Senate and and was elected a senator, and he's standing there with his non-caveman wife and then their sort of hybrid children. And what was amazing about it was he sounded a gazillion times more competent than either the current president or Fetterman.
Did you, I mean, I know you did you hear the president yesterday? I mean, those speeches were insane. First of all, the lies about his son twice, but the blatant lying, you know, about policy, about his about going to a black university in Delaware, and no one stops him. Nothing will stop him from continuing to do this. I don't believe this is all just, you know, age related or a decline in cognitive ability. I think he has always been this sort of liar, and now he is back to acting like he did in 1988 in a way.
Yeah, he was known. I mean, that's what killed his first presidential race, is that he was lying so much about his academic background and his family life and all that. So it is a return to form, if he ever left that form. But I can't even understand him. I mean, I
well, that's different. Yeah.
A thing of terror hits me when I'm on TV and they play a clip, because I can't understand the words he's saying, because he's so into the mumbling phase of his decline. It's embarrassing. It's ridiculous. And the New York Times yesterday, Peter Baker wrote up a piece about how he stumbled a couple of times. And he lists just like two of the things yesterday, which were that he falsely claimed we were at war with Iraq and not Ukraine, and then explained that he said that because that war had killed his, or that his son Beau had died in Iraq. And then later he's like, oh, wait, actually he didn't. But he, you know, I mean, it was just, it didn't even mention all of the gaffes and stumbles that he had.
Verbal fumbles, a few verbal fumbles, says the New York Times. Yeah, it's, you know, I don't know. You're not a Seinfeld fan, but Costanza, one of the characters, I'm sure you know the characters, right, is trying to explain to Jerry Seinfeld how to lie and make it work, because he's the greatest liar who's ever lived. And his advice is, it's not a lie if you believe it. And that's how I feel these stories happen with Biden. I think he believes that his son died in Iraq. I think he's invented this fantasy, and he actually is earnest about it. And it's really weird, ugly, and I can't believe he's president.
Yeah, and he's been such a liar for so long, where he sort of has this, he steals glory from other people and takes it as his own. And there's nothing better for this type of personality than to have a son who was killed in military action. And so he's kind of glommed onto that and can't let it go. Yeah.
Bad stuff.
Good psychoanalysis.
Yeah, we're.
Okay, what are the races? We're predicting races.
So Rubio's fine. How about?
Oh, speaking of, holy schmoly, did you see this actress Jennifer Lewis speaking at a Val Demings rally yesterday?
What was she even talking about? It made no sense.
It was such hucksterism. I couldn't believe it. It's like she had pulled off the shelf a speech about black rights that had been written like 50 years ago, and just put it in there and used it to try to attack Rubio. And it backfired so horribly. She was like, before you speak to us, remember that Rosa Parks sat at the
on the bus
front of the bus. And, you know, like all these like sort of hokey rhyming schemes. And Marco Rubio actually tweeted out her speech for him. Like, it was supposed to be an attack on Marco Rubio, and he was like, enjoy, you know, you done messed up when the guy that you're trying to attack is like, see what she said.
It reminds me of watching Biden pull out like trickle down economics and stuff that no one is even talking about. It has nothing to do with the races, which I'm writing about now, the Social Security stuff, which is just a ginned up nonsense that no Republican is talking about at all. All right, let me get back on track here. So we have Georgia done. I guess Pennsylvania. Can't imagine that anyone who saw that debate or has heard about that debate can vote for Fetterman. I can't comprehend it.
I can't either, but this is, you know, like 600,000 people voted before that debate because of our unsecure ballot system. Pennsylvania is a hot mess. It's a lawless state. And so who knows what's going to happen in terms of balloting issues. Although I do want to point out that yesterday, the Republican National Committee, the NRCC, and the Pennsylvania GOP won a massive case that they had sued over regarding whether ballots that are improperly filled out can be counted anyway. Whether someone who fails to follow the law on signing and dating a ballot can have their ballot counted. And the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, which is a very awful, bad court, somehow still managed to say that you should not be able to violate the law and have your ballot counted. And on that note, I have to say, while I'm extremely worried about the integrity of Pennsylvania's elections, the world is just a completely different place in terms of election integrity than it was 2 years ago. And Republicans had a massive wake-up call 2 years ago when they realized that their general lack of interest in election integrity had led to a pretty catastrophic situation. The left had invested in taking over elections for decades. They put the money and the work into it. Republicans were prohibited from getting involved actually by a consent decree that they had signed in the early 80s that kept them from having any real oversight of election day operations. But that expired in like 2018, I think. And so they had just started getting their litigation efforts going. Bronna McDaniel, when she became the head of the RNC, said it was her intention to become the most litigious RNC chair in history. She meant like, we're going to start battling these things. Democrats had a massive litigation effort going on for decades. Their top election lawyer is Mark Elias. He's the guy who created the Russia collusion hoax. His 2020 plan was to take over election systems, flood the zone with tens of millions of mail-in ballots. And he was fought a little, but not as much as he should have been. And so finally, you have RNC investing in everything from like litigation to training poll observers to having election integrity specialists in each state in the country. You have private law firms like the ones that Elias has always worked at, who are now making election integrity a focal point of their practice. Like that's all they do. You have tons of grassroots groups that are staffing election observer oversight stuff. And then you have this like legal arm that's fighting the legal battles that come into play. I mean, it's just actually pretty impressive. And I'm not saying that everything's taken care of, like there are decades of work to be done on this to get back to like an even playing field with Democrats, but it's just a much, much, much better situation than it was 2 years ago.
That's good to hear. Will you be laying all this out in a piece for us to read?
Yeah, I'm writing on it.
All right.
I'll get it out
there.
Awesome.
Let me move on to the next race. Grifter, Pinhead, Evan McMullen against Mike Lee. I never bought into the idea that McMullen was close. I think he's going to lose big, like 10 points big.
So first of all, you should buy into the idea that he's close. He has had massive funding and support, and Utah is a very weird place. My husband has tons of family that lived there. My husband was raised Mormon. So just like when we go visit family in Salt Lake, it's like visiting 100 cousins, you know, first cousins. Like it's just amazing how large those families are. And Utah is interesting in that the Republican Party is kind of probably has one of the largest, what you might disparagingly call rhino contingents, has a large rhino contingent. I can't speak. They really are not. I don't know. Okay, so they've got a large rhino thing.
I think dispositionally they are conservative. They probably do not like the tone of the MAGA folks as much as perhaps others, right?
Is in that fact, fair? They hate that. And then there's like, maybe think of it like third. A third is rhino. A third are strong, like constitutional Republican conservatives, the kind who think Mike Lee is a gift from God. And then a third are crazy right wingers who are obsessed with like the gold standard. So those people frequently vote for third party candidates. That rhino caucus is led by Mitt Romney, and he has intentionally supported Evan McMullen. Like, it's an actual sabotage against the Republican Party, sort of, to get support for this guy who will caucus with Democrats and who's been endorsed by the Democrats. Or, I mean, he might deny that he's going to caucus with Democrats right now, but he's been endorsed by the Democrats because they really...
let me ask you this. If he promises not to caucus with anyone, which I don't believe he'll do... Why is he there? What is the purpose? He's just a vote. Caucusing is kind of an important thing you do, being on committees and so on, right?
I don't understand. Did you vote for Evan McMullen one time? You might be a better
I see what you. I see exactly what you're doing there. No, I did not vote for Evan McMullen
because my husband did, and a bunch of people I know did, and I never understood how anyone would ever think that was a good idea.
You don't understand what a protest vote is? I do. I don't vote as protest most of the time.
I protest vote every time I go vote. I have written in Donald Trump for my city council member, my mayor. Like, I vote for him all the time because I feel really good about how it went the first time I voted for him. I protest vote regularly. I voted for Ray. Like, I lived in D.C., but I make better choices than Evan McMullen. Anyway,
I want to defend your husband and others who voted for him. I don't think they fully understood the breadth of his grifterdom or how he was at the time. And it seemed like a safe protest vote when you didn't, because you know why.
And my husband was working for Bill Kristol at that time. And so he was in that orbit of, and I think he at that time believed Bill was a conservative. Obviously that myth has been exploded by Bill Kristol himself. But yeah, and so Bill Kristol's big in this operation with Evan McMullen. So there really is a threat. And Mitt Romney, I think, wants to run as an independent. I also think he would love to get a little caucus of like six people who he thinks he could control the Senate. So it makes sense why Mitt did it. And then I also want to say the Deseret News has been absurd in how much they have been helping Evan McMullen. They have been opposed to Mike Lee from the get-go. I don't know if that's a money thing or if it's just political ties to Mitt Romney or what, but it's been kind of appalling to watch, actually. And I have talked to a lot of Mormon friends who are just horrified by what Deseret News has done, which is a church-owned publication.
I do not contend to know as much about Utah as you do. I just believe that most conservatives are finally, when they finally start paying attention to what he's about and what Mike Lee has done, that Mike Lee is going to win comfortably.
I think he will too, but I'm just saying it's not crazy for people to be worried about it because Mitt Romney and a lot of moneyed people have put a lot of attention on trying to help McMullen win.
Arizona. Mark Kelly and Blake Masters.
Okay.
I feel like there's some momentum for Masters. Again, my sense is that he's tethered his ride to Carrie Lake, who seems to have much more momentum and is frankly a more talented candidate. Just looking at polls, and I have nowhere else to go with this, it seems to me like it'll be very close, but he'll probably not pull it out.
Not. So I am also less, I would like to disagree and I keep agreeing with you on everything. I'm also not as bullish on Masters as everyone I know is. I will say, I know a lot of people on the Masters campaign, they were freaking out right up until about like a week ago, at which point they all decided that they're going to win. So
do you think the libertarian bowing out helps? I find that people overestimate the libertarian support. Most of those people are just, again, they like to vote for third parties. There are actually some leftists who more left-wing people who vote. I just don't think it makes that much of a difference.
I don't know, because Arizona is a state with a large libertarian population. These things can count in close races. So it wasn't just getting out, but endorsing Blake that I think is huge. So it could matter a little. I think it matters less in states like Virginia when a libertarian runs. I used to think it mattered a lot, but I think I was wrong.
Yeah, there's definitely more libertarian types out west.
No, it is true. Like, people made a big deal about the Green Party in 2016, how Green Party candidates hurt Hillary in Wisconsin and Pennsylvania. And that is true. Libertarian candidates hurt Trump in those same places. So it kind of balanced out to some extent. But if you're only running one party or the other, it really can make a difference in some of these tight elections.
Having been to libertarian conventions and knowing many libertarians, I think people overestimate how invested they would be in politics as we see it in general. Anyway, I think it's negligible in a race like that.
Blake Masters to win very badly. I pray about it sometimes, which makes me feel bad because I don't think you should pray about political things, but I really want him to win. I am allowing myself a little bit of hope about it, but just, I feel like people are getting too optimistic relative to the polls, and I don't even believe in the polls, and yet I still think, like, the Democrats spent $100 million on that race. Like, it's gonna be hard for, and it would be hard for Ronald Reagan to defeat $100 million against him. So
yeah, I'm not a huge fan of, I mean, he seems, as a guy, he seems fine to me. I don't get the why people are turned off and why there's so much vote splitting going on in Arizona. But, I'm not big on these economic populist candidates, Vance and him. But obviously, I prefer them to the Democrat, who I think is far, far worse. Let's talk about Ohio. It seems to me Vance is going to walk away with that one as well.
Yeah, I guess the polls are close enough for people to be legitimately talking about. But I just don't think a state that Trump won by 8 points is going to not elect a very Trumpy candidate like J.D. Vance.
The RCP average is Vance up 2.
Oh, okay.
The thing for me about that, when I look at these, when I go back and look at polling like this from other races in other years, is that Ryan has basically not been up in any real poll, maybe one time. And that kind of trend just says to me that it's going to be a pretty decent win. So I think that is it. I can't think of any other Senate race. Which one?
I think we should talk about, like, how big the House majority will be for Republicans. We could talk about the Oregon governor's race, the Washington Senate race. I guess you're fine with North Carolina. I think the Republican's going to win, Ted Budd, but
yeah. Like, he seems to be up.
That's been a shutout in the polls. I don't know why people aren't.
I don't know enough about the House to give you a specific number of who.
Nevada.
Oh, Nevada. I don't know. That's a tough one. I don't know. It's going to be super close, right? But I don't know. What do you think?
Again, I think people are forgetting that Nevada has very bad election administration. They have massive unsupervised mail-in balloting, where if you ever registered to vote at an address, you're going to get a ballot sent to that address with your name on it, even if you haven't lived there for a long time. We saw what happened in 2020, where you just have, like, piles of ballots. Anytime you have ballots, floating around like that, it doesn't inspire confidence in the security of the election. And Harry Reid built a powerful machine there. And while I think that machine is breaking, I don't know how broken it is. And so, again, super optimistic in my heart on this one, but I'm not sure if people aren't over their skis a little bit on. I really hope that in a week we get back and we talk and we're just like, that was amazing. There were all sorts of surprises and, it's a really fun night, or in a month when we finally count all the votes. But
I don't I keep my ex, I try to keep an even keel. I don't have really, you know, my ex, I don't really have expectations, but all the signs and all the clues are telling me Republicans are going to do very well. And if that happens, then places like Nevada have a good chance of flipping. As far as the House goes, people forget, I think that because of how we, you know, because of how many seats Republicans have won in the past, I think there's going to be a ceiling. I don't think this is going to be one of those huge red waves. Maybe 30 seats or something like that.
It's pretty big.
Which is the high, I think the high end. For me, honestly, the Senate is far more important. I don't really care that much about the House. It's not like they're going to be passing legislation or anything. I do care because they'll open, hopefully, impeachment proceedings on some of the people in the cabinet. I don't think they should impeach the president. That always backfires. He deserves it. I think they should be impeaching Ayorka and Garland.
Yeah, I totally agree that impeaching Biden is stupid and a waste of time. Or not, I don't even know. It's like, I think you and I agree that you could impeach a lot of people if you wanted to.
Sure.
But, you know, there's this thing about the presidency where I think you voted for him, you get him. If you want to change course in a couple of years, go ahead and do that. Whereas, even though I understand that he's violated his oath to the Constitution with all sorts of things like his failure to defend the border or his tolerance of all these like unconstitutional things happening at various agencies. So I get that you could do it, but I think it's just more effective politically and otherwise to go after some of these people who are destroying the country at the Department of Justice, Department of Homeland Security, et cetera.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I told you this, but I think there's maybe four or five presidents who don't deserve to be impeached in history of the United States. This isn't even a joke. I'm not exaggerating.
No,
maybe George Washington and like Warren Harding.
Did you just say maybe George Washington?
Yeah, but like Thomas Jefferson, I think deserved impeachment. But anyway, I don't want to get into that too deeply. I will write something up on President's Day. But Biden certainly deserves it. It's just a waste of time. It's not, he won't be removed. And then there's always blowback for it. I think for Republicans, it's far better to go after some of these people, as you said, who have abdicated their duty to the Constitution, especially Garland, in my opinion. I think it's one of the worst AGs in the history of the United States, just amazingly incompetent and political.
And real quick on that point, we love to give credit to Mitch McConnell. I've done it myself for how he kept Merrick Garland from being voted on as a Supreme Court nominee. And I think that was really good work he did. And I literally wrote a book about it. But then I think Mitch McConnell was one of the nearly every Republican senator who voted to put this man on as Attorney General, which has had such disastrous consequences for the Republic. And it would be great if Republican senators could grow like a brain and a spine, or some portion of a brain and a spine, to be smarter than that in the future.
I would have voted for him too. I think president, you rolled your eyes. So I think that
dear listener,
as far as
I'm like cringing in pain. Why in the world would
if
you?
If I was a senator, I think the president gets to name his cabinet unless you have corruption or some kind of extremist. I don't think Garland seemed, before he became AG, like he was some kind of extremist. He seemed like a mainstream Democrat to me. There was nothing in his record that showed that he was corrupt or would have been corrupt. And I think getting past that and voting and letting the president have his cabinet and his staff and his appointees in general is fine. Garland did not come off. I did
You're
not think
like
Garland
saying,
would
live
act this way.
In the 1990s, where we have different standards of when to confirm.
There people. Was no legitimate reason to stop Garland from being AG. What is your point? What would your case be, that he's a Democrat?
So first off, before anybody was nominated to anything, I would have put them through the ringer much more. So I would have used every senatorial procedure at hand to force issues to be dealt with. So the FBI and Department of Justice are completely corrupted organizations, and they were even before Merrick Garland was coming in. So I would have held up until I got everything I needed in terms of accountability for what they did to the country with their election meddling and their lies and their leaks and their two standards of justice. So on that reason alone, that has nothing to do with Merrick Garland, I would have held that up big time. As far as Garland himself, yeah, as a federal judge, he probably didn't have much of a track record to,
you literally wouldn't have let anyone have any
much of a track record, but I would have also demanded things like ideas about who he was going to nominate to different positions, who he would be overseeing at the Department of Justice. Like, it's not just Garland, it's everybody who's there who has built into their core a desire to fight rule of law and one standard of justice. So I would have just fought it on, unless I got someone to agree that they would completely turn that department around,
agree to anything. They weren't going to do it anyway. The only way that's going to happen is through a Republican administration. We just had one. He didn't do anything about it, frankly. And, you know, so I don't know. I guess I think the presidents should have their cabinets and their appointees confirmed within reason. I mean, not when when you have radicals and things like that. What topic were we on that we are here now? I don't even know. Did we hit all? Oh, yeah. You said the House. What do you think about the House?
No, I totally agree with you that because of redistricting, it's made many fewer districts like movable. I don't like that, by the way. And
I do.
More than anything, I wish we just had a massive House of Representatives. I think that when the country started, we had one representative for like every 20,000 people. And now it's much, much, much larger. Or maybe, you know, I don't remember what the ratios were. I think if we could get like one per 100,000. We just have a massive.
Oh my God. I totally disagree.
Oh, it would totally be great. Disagree. And then people would be really accountable to the people. It would be a real house, you know?
No, they wouldn't. I think there are too many competitive districts, frankly. I think people should be able to live their lives without worrying about political races, being bombarded by partisanship every 2 years in their districts. They should be able to live with people who agree with them and representatives who represent them, rather than having these ridiculous fights. You want more politicians in DC. That's something. I would like fewer, not more. You want every 100,000, you know how many, that's like,
I was told there would be
like ancient Greek where you had like 1,000 people showing up as a jury for a trial. I mean, it is insane. All right.
I like it.
So you think structurally it's going to be difficult for them to have a big red wave election, but you think they'll take the House?
I do. Oh, it's going to be a big taking of the House, but there's a limit to what big can mean. Yeah.
Okay. So how about the Senate?
You were saying that they would have that they would get an additional 30 seats. Is that right?
That's my top end prediction. Maybe a five less. Yeah.
Okay. I think that's. It's going
to
be
about
exciting.
The Senate. So you think they'll win? Sounds like you think they'll win the Senate back, which is far more important to me simply because they can stop another Garland from being on the Supreme Court.
I actually think you only need one chamber first off. So just taking the House, which they're going to do, is great.
The Senate's far more important to me just as far as judges go. It's the only thing holding back the complete destruction of the Constitution right now, in my opinion. All right. So wait, you said they only need one House. So you're saying they're not going to win the Senate, or they are going to win the Senate?
Okay. By the way, I think it would be like 1,000 members of Congress if we had one.
Did you just do math?
Huh?
You did math?
I could be wrong. Carry the whatever.
I wanted to do the math and I'm like, I'm not even going to attempt this.
I think 1,000 member House would be great. Truly great. I want to get to that. We have to build a nice building. Okay. What was the question?
Just, I'm curious. Do you think they'll win the Senate, Republicans or not?
I do. I absolutely do. I don't know if I agree with some people that it's going to be like 54 seats. I think it'll be more like 51 or two. I don't know.
I think 52. That's my, not like a big prediction. Most people, I think, say 52.
I will say, if it were 54, I'd be like, whoa, that was crazy. But I wouldn't be shocked. If they lost seats, I'd be like, well, that was interesting. Not what I expected.
It could, right? But 52 would something I think would be expected. 54 would signify probably great losses in other places as well. That would mean that this was basically a wave election. So let me change. Is that it? Did you have anything else?
That's it.
I wanted to quickly just mention a story last week that really got me worked up and pretty angry. I think it's one of the most cynical and ugly things I've seen Democrats and a lot of pundits engage in, which is the attack on, wait, I forget his name. Is it Paul Pelosi?
Mm-hmm.
By this mentally ill, drug-addled mind. I read I don't even want to mention his name. But anyway, lots of pundits have written pieces about that. This shows the dark heart of the Republican Party, how it is basically sadism. This is what one Atlantic writer who we are familiar with wrote yesterday. Politicians have all said that many politicians, Democrats have said that Republicans hadn't even condemned the attack. I wouldn't condemn the attack. Personally, I would condemn all political violence, which happens all over this country against Republicans as well, because I do not take ownership, just as January 6th, I do not take ownership of people who do things under their own name and their own philosophy that has nothing to do with me. And this was all just a cynical attempt to make Republicans take ownership of a crazy person who had nothing to do with them. And I think they have to stop apologizing and being, compelled to condemn incidents that have nothing to do with them. And by the way, even if this was a crazy right winger and he wasn't on drugs and he wasn't nuts, you still don't have to apologize. You shouldn't be inhibited from political speech because of the violence of terrorists and third party people. And that's just my statement right there.
Yeah. I also just think politically, I know that Democrats were really trying to make something of this talking point that because this guy personally attacked the Pelosi's because he didn't like their politics. Yes, he was drug addled. Yes, he was not mentally well, but it was a targeted attack that therefore the election should turn on this crime against the Pelosi family. And this is after spending the last several months saying that you shouldn't talk about the massive crime wave going against every other American. Like, it's very bad what happened to Paul Pelosi. I pray that he recovers completely. I'm horrified that his house was so poorly secured that this awful attack could happen. But like, I also feel bad for all of my friends in San Francisco who get mugged all the time and don't get police visits, or whose homes are broken into and they don't get police visits, or who are dealing with like defecating transients and don't have, a properly functioning city government to take care of it. Like, that's all, it's all very bad. And it's very bad what happened to the Pelosi's, but all of this stuff is bad. And it's a much bigger issue and less random that this is happening in cities across the country. And I wish Democrats would care at least as much about other Americans as they do about Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi.
Well, I have more to say on this, actually, now that you mentioned that. One, I read a piece in the Washington Post and I read a piece in the New York Times that said Republicans had been, this was the culmination of Republican attacks on, literally that word, culmination of Republican attacks on Nancy Pelosi. Are Republicans not allowed to run ads targeting Nancy Pelosi? She's one of the most powerful political players in American history, probably. They're not allowed to talk. Do they not target Mitch McConnell? Do they not target Donald Trump?
Well, that's what I'm wondering. Is what they're actually saying that when they lie and say horrible things about Donald Trump, that they're trying to get him killed? Because I feel like this is not the argument I would be making if I had just spent, the last few decades viciously attacking my political opponents.
A couple of months ago, the president called anyone who voted against this policy semi-fascist. And by the way, how about the guy who tried to kill all of the Republican leadership on a baseball field, or the guy who went to try to assassinate Brett Kavanaugh, or the guy who killed five cops in Dallas and killed them? And he was a BLM protester. No one went. I don't think anyone went out and blamed Democrats who support that movement for those murders. but maybe they will moving forward. I mean, this is what's going to happen. And secondly, I want to talk about the conspiracy theory surrounding that incident, if they are. I believe, you know, that it was an attack, and I don't really, you know, it doesn't matter that much to me, honestly, but we can't trust the media anymore, and we can't trust the cops. That's why people hear these stories that have very few specifics, and they start thinking something else has happened there, because the media has, you know, lost our trust, and the police have lost our trust in many instances. So I don't really blame people for asking questions, because most of the time the media covers up things that are inconvenient for Democrats.
And more than that, I loved what Glenn Greenwald said recently, which is skepticism should be praised, not shamed. I will not reveal details because it comes from our, you know, private employee chat. But one of our colleagues had written in this chat about how he hadn't believed the particular details about another high profile political attack, this one on a Republican. And I was thinking, that's exactly what I want every reporter to say, that when he's first presented with the details of something, he's skeptical. He checks it out. He's like, or could it be this? Or could it be that? Skepticism is what our media need when they're presented with absurd conspiracy theories, such as the one about Donald Trump stealing the 2016 election, or about Brett Kavanaugh being a secret serial gang rapist strolling the streets of suburban Maryland, or about Nicholas Sandman being a violent saboteur of people when he's at a pro-life march, or of Jussie Smollett having been attacked by people who said, this is MAGA country. We needed our journalists to be skeptical, and they weren't skeptical of any of that. They didn't even try to pretend to be skeptical of any of that. They just went whole hog into pushing propaganda to hurt conservatives. And so it's become incumbent upon Americans themselves to have the skepticism that they used to trust their corporate media to have.
Yeah, I mean, I have an overcompensate. I overcompensate because I'm basically, since I'm a kid, skeptical of anything anyone tells me, right? And I'm not saying this as, you know, it's not no great thing, because oftentimes, most of the time, the things that people tell me are true. But right away, I'm skeptical of it, which is why I think I got into journalism, you know, a long time ago. But these days, anything that aligns with your partisan goals, you know, people show no skepticism. Why wouldn't reporters should have been all over that story trying? If it was a Republican, they would have been digging into the police reports. They would have been calling the cop who showed up.
Could I share my own theory?
You can always share things. Okay. Yeah.
So basically right away when this happened, I tried to look into the named, the guy who was charged with the crime, yeah. Immediately found all of his like conspiratorial stuff. And he seemed to me to be someone who was drug addled, had been a product obviously of like liberal San Francisco, but had become more conspiratorial about all sorts of things. But like some of what he was conspiratorial about isn't conspiratorial about, you know, isn't really a conspiracy theory. It's just more like a reflection of reality. Like people did do all sorts of things to destroy the country as part of their pandemic response. It's not a conspiracy theory to notice that. But he seemed very mentally unwell, probably from a lifetime of drug use. I actually think that's a really interesting storyline, because that's what most of the crime in San Francisco is a result of. But that maybe some of the things about that we also had reported, like that the victim seemed confused about whether someone was his friend or not, and how they were finding them wrestling over a hammer and stuff. I kind of wondered if maybe, you know, and Paul Pelosi recently was arrested for a DUI. So at least we have that knowledge that a couple months ago he did not make good decisions with drinking. But I kind of wondered, maybe he'd been drinking that night, and so that explained part of the confusion when he was attacked.
I mean, I had a theory that what happened was the guy was in there and he seemed weird. So when he called the cops, he called the person his friend to mm-hmm. put him at ease, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that made sense to me. You know, yeah. What I try not to.
But you remember there was a dispatch saying the victim seemed confused.
Yeah.
So maybe they were relaying that, or maybe there was something else. I don't know.
I just, with any story like that, or any story in general these days, I try to wait 24 hours or more and let it shake out a bit before I say anything publicly. I mean, because you never know, and it's, you can't trust the reporting, which incidentally was wrong. They said he was, you know, he only had his underwear on, and then they retracted that and then called anyone who mentioned it a conspiracy theorist.
They said a third party. A third party opened the door, right. And then that it was a conspiracy theory if you believed their reporting that a third party opened the door. I mean, I hate our media so much. I went, this is like kind of tangential to this whole thing, but I was giving a speech this morning and one of the people who was there told me that the Washington Post still has not printed a story regarding our local congressman, Don Beyer, how he was employing a staffer who was passing information from China or who was working for the Chinese embassy. Like, that seems, I mean, it's a local news of the local congressman who had a staffer who was apparently being controlled by the Chinese embassy.
It's just complete corruption. It's just completely corrupt.
I hate the Washington Post.
I'm writing a piece right now about there's a New York Times story that says that many Republicans have embraced and are talking about destroying, you know, slashing Social Security, Medicare. There's not a single quote in the 1,400 words from a single Republican who says
it.
Anything. Tankersley, or I think is his name, Jim. So not then it links, you know, it hyperlinks to another story in Bloomberg that also doesn't quote a single person from saying that. This is all based on Rick Scott's agenda, you know, Save America agenda, where he doesn't even say that we should slash Social Security. What he says is that federal programs should be voted on every 5 years and audited, which I think is, you know, if you love democracy, why do we have to live by the edicts of people who are all dead? And why can't we renew some of these programs? But, you know, whatever, that's, you know, that's a separate issue. But it is just a ginned up fear mongering operation that Biden decides to talk about, and then all the media backfills with BS, sorry for the second time, BS, you know, stories. All right, let's hit another topic for a second if you want. I want to talk about Elon Musk's takeover of Twitter. I don't believe much will change. I already see him putting together, convening left-wing, heavy left-wing committees to look at hate speech and election integrity and all this stuff. So what's really going to change? I don't think much.
One of the groups that he has working on election integrity literally ran a disinformation hoax in U.S. elections just a few years ago, 4 years ago. New Knowledge, this group that ran they like hired Russian bots to flood a Senate candidate's social media, then had reporters report that he was supported by Russians, then did an after action analysis where they bragged about how they had manipulated the election and media coverage. This group is now on Elon Musk's like election integrity council. It's insane. So I'm very hopeful about Elon Musk. It's certainly better than the alternative, but man, is that a quick caving to powerful interests.
Yeah. I don't care about disinformation or misinformation. People should have to live in a free society. We live with that sort of thing and you should live with it. And if, you know, basically what they're saying is that people are too stupid to navigate speech. I think that's wrong. If the Russian bots are out there, the Russian bots are out there. I'll block them. And that's how we should live our lives. But I wanted to mention another aspect of this that made me, I was just found it so amusing yesterday that he's going to charge $8 for people, I think a month, to have the blue checks that they value more than all things in life. And the people who I knew would be upset about it, that, you know, would be upset about the idea of proles being able to have a Twitter badge like they do, were exactly, you know, were right on cue. And I find that hilarious. I actually like the blue, the check mark, because not that I'm some, you know, I'm not as big a name as someone like Molly Hemingway, but there are people who go out there and pretend to be me and say things. So the blue check helps people know that it's me. So I don't know if I'm going to pay $8 for it or not, but it's not a, you know, I don't care that someone who isn't quote unquote a public figure has one. I mean, I don't even understand why anyone would care.
I don't know. I liked how there were features, though, to help control the riffraff. Like, I do get a lot of bot armies placed against me. I actually kind of enjoy it because I like to see who are the special interests and how do they work together. So if I criticize, like, Liz Cheney or Evan McMullen, I get that sort of, like, Russia hoax bot army put against me. There are other people like Garrett Graef. You know, you kind of, like, watch a very inorganic information operation being put against you. And it just teaches you how they're trying to control information and what they do. Ukraine, if you do not follow the party line on whether there should be limitless funding of the Ukraine war, of the Russian war against Ukraine, funding against that, you know, you get a bot army put against you. And so I kind of like seeing it, but it's also really manipulative of, you know, it's a way to manufacture consent and manufacture support for different policy proposals. It's, I actually thought Elon Musk wouldn't be allowed to purchase Twitter, because I thought that the US government is probably doing so much to utilize Twitter that they would view it as a national security threat. And they started saying that. So
yeah, they're saying that now. I mean, Chris Murphy wants to investigate Saudi money that's been invested in Twitter for years and years before Elon Musk even took over. Mm-hmm. I will quickly say, I have no problem with programs that, you know, or algorithms that eliminate bots from being on there. I don't really even have a problem from, you know, actually, you know, I just think it should be neutral in the sense of speech. So even misinformation is free. If it's free speech, it should be allowed. If it's a threat or if it's some sort of, you know, bot army, that should be banned. But like, you can curate your own experience on Twitter pretty well if you want. You can only see comments from people who follow you. You can block. I've had a lot of anti-Semitic stuff thrown at me, you know, years ago on Twitter. And I just block those people. They exist out there. Sometimes I think they're just trying to upset you and things like that. So you just block them. I don't know. I just feel like we have to be adults and deal with speech that we don't like.
Yep.
Anything else on the political front?
Nothing political. No.
All right. Let's talk about culture. I have watched nothing that I can think. I'm watching old. I watch like the glass blowing show on Netflix. It's a glass blowing competition. It's really cool.
I do want to say, yeah, I have never gotten so much email about this show as I did, or texts from friends as I did when you told your story about trying to be a normal human being. And that's just,
I have to say,
but
I got a lot of mail too on that, and people giving me advice and asking me to call them. I'm like, did you not just listen? I have trouble making friends. I'm like, just gonna call you stranger.
Did you see some of the people like offering tips on how to be a normal human? I loved it. It was so touching. And I don't know. I just love people. I hope
people are much, again, I'm very cynical because of the business I work in, but whenever I'm out there in the real world, people are just mostly pretty nice and patient with me and pretty wonderful.
I hope you continue to update us on your journey.
I don't have much. I went miniature golfing for the first time in a long time for fun with my wife, but no one was around, so I couldn't talk to anyone, but it was fun.
I am obsessed with miniature golfing. And there's
Quite often in Colorado near Castle Rock. There's this like on right off 25 there. And I don't know why I'm being so specific, but
yeah, where?
I used to play. Yeah, I don't know, like south of Denver, but yet not Castle Rock. There's somewhere there was a miniature golf course there. Yeah, I used to visit it.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
I would like to know so that when I go back with my kids, I can play.
Yeah.
Colorado has tons. Like there's the Glenwood Springs course that I love so much. It also has skee ball. There's one in Salida that I really enjoy, but there's one near me in Northern Virginia that I love.
No one was there, so I couldn't talk to anyone.
I don't want to talk to anyone when I'm miniature golfing. I just
serious
wanna...
business for you. Yeah.
My husband, of course, like beats us all the time. Although one year I went with my niece and she's a legit golfer and she made us all feel like such losers because she could really putt. Like everything was a hole in one for her and it was very embarrassing to me.
I detest golf itself. So just so you know, but miniature golf is fun. Yeah. So anyway, I walk my dog. I try to speak. Walking your dog is a good way to meet people. Uh-huh. So I'll say like, oh, what breed is that? You know, even though it's like obviously a Labrador or something, but I need to speak to people. So that's a good way in because my dog's very cute. It's a Wheaton Terrier. But people weren't that friendly this week, but I'll have more updates.
Okay, great.
Yeah. So let's talk about you.
I have watched a few things.
Yeah, I heard.
I watched. So my kids wanted to watch La La Land. So we watched that and.
You've never seen it.
It was good. It was really good. I really felt like the ending made it. And it was a very touching love story. And really, I think also, I don't know, it just was, it was good for my daughters at the age they are to kind of realize how relationships can work out, or, you know, that type of stuff.
It's a very bittersweet story. Yeah. Yes, I hated it. I hated the ending.
Wait, I thought you said you hadn't seen it.
No, I've seen it. I hated it.
It was very bittersweet. And I think my younger kid was very disturbed by how bittersweet it was. But
when my young kid used to watch Dumbo, we used to always, it was still on video, so we used to, on DVD, we used to stop it so that you wouldn't see the scene where the mother is taken away. So then one day,
spoiler alert.
Yeah, one day we forgot to do that, and she just looked at me with tears in her eyes and said, "What's happening?" You know, she was really upset. This is how I feel like when I see movies. I'm like, "Why am I watching movies that are so sad? I want action. I want adventure. I don't want movies about lost love or anything like that." So I did not love the ending, though. I thought it was really. I would hate a musical, but I actually enjoyed the dancing and the music. I thought it was really well done. Mm-hmm. He's the director of Whiplash, which is a movie I like quite a bit.
What's that again?
The drummer. Have you ever seen it?
He's
in this, yeah.
Miles. Is that his name? Taylor? I don't know. Earl. Okay. I also watched Fletch with John.
So Hamm. The new one? Yeah. Yes. It's called Fletch something, right? I forget.
Fletch Confess.
Yes.
And it was good. It was fine. I wouldn't like highly recommend it. I thought John Hamm was good. It was definitely more faithful to the books than the
Chevy Chase ones.
Yeah, Chevy Chase, which was not very faithful. But it was good. And then my husband, I can't remember the name of it. He introduced me to this like comedy sketch show that I can't remember what it's called. Hold on, let me look it up. Oh, it's called I Think You Should Leave. And it's I Think You Should Leave with Tim Robinson, and it's a few years old, and I only watched a few episodes of it. It was absurd, but very enjoyable. And now I'm finding myself, you know, clipping memes from the show. But it's like
I'm gonna check that out.
That makes no sense, but is really delightful. I thought.
I also heard that you are a big fan of a movie called Togo.
I'm obsessed. Someone was on Twitter making fun of it, like saying this isn't even a real movie. They were basically saying, I've never heard of this movie. It's on Disney Plus, which I
Willem Dafoe, right?
It is such a good movie. I have seen it with every member of my family separately. I'll watch it with anyone who wants to watch it. It is about this dog who was the real hero of the Nome serum run in, like, you know, whatever that was, 1920. Mm-hmm. And everyone thinks it's Balto. Balto has the statue in Central Park. Everyone thinks that's the dog that did it. But Togo did the vast majority of the run himself. And it's his story. And it is beautifully told. And I cry every time. It's just so... I love that dog so much. I love that movie and I love everybody in it. It's great. Very well done.
Balto is stolen. There's stolen valor there. It's really Togo.
Yeah, it's not Balto's fault. It's just there was a journalistic error, surprise, at the end of the run, and it got out of control.
Wait, so you cried? So I can't watch this movie. That means there's some kind of sad ending. It's like Old Yeller. When I watched that in school for the first time, I was like, how could you do this to me? But anyway, quickly wanted to mention, if you have questions or suggestions, or you want to talk about or help me be a normal person, you can email us at radio@thefederalist.com. If you listen to us on Apple or wherever, maybe give us a good review. If you like the show, leave a comment. We would appreciate that. And Molly, anything else?
Nope. See you next week.
See you next week. Be lovers of freedom and anxious for the fray.
It's age.